Hello, this is Greg, and this is another episode of Listing Bits. Today, I've got a very special guest, Danae Evans, CEO of CMLS. We're live at the Rezo. Is it Rezo or Rezo?
Pretty sure it's Rezo.
The Rezo conference here in downtown San Diego in the Gaslamp District. I'm very honored to have you here, Danae.
Honored.
You're a tough get. So it's, you know, you're here now, right? So
very happy to be here.
Oh, fantastic. So give us some background. I mean, where do you grow up? Where do you come from?
I'm actually a small town girl. I grew up in a little town in Nevada, just outside of Las Vegas. Pretty much have lived there my whole life, shy of a little time. I lived 10 years in Denver, but I've now come back home. And so I call Las Vegas, Nevada my home. And I get to work with multiple listing services now, which I absolutely love.
So what was the journey from that, right? I mean, where'd you go to school?
I'm actually a graduate of UNLV, University of Nevada, okay. Las Vegas. My degree is in finance, but specializing in real estate. So I was originally on the path to study finance in the way of investments and whatnot. I actually transitioned over to looking at real estate as investment vehicles and just my love of real estate since I was a kid. My dad built houses and he was always doing side projects, and I helped build houses from the ground up, from digging footers and pulling wires to, you know, he would do fixer uppers or whatnot. So
was he a real estate agent or was he just a developer? Just like
a handyman.
Just a handyman.
Yeah, just a do-it-yourself handyman, find the deals and get it done. And worked full-time at the power plant there and the close to where we lived. And then just would do stuff like that on the side. He'd also do like cars and motorcycles and whatnot. So, but definitely a love of real estate since I was little and always involved, and he'd always include us in what he was doing. So.
Did you ever sell real estate?
I never sold real estate, but I did. So I worked in retail banking. I worked for Bank of America for several years and did a lot in the way of helping people with home equity loans or saving up to buy a house or getting them their cashier's checks for their closing. And then I did 10 years in mortgage. So I worked on a different side of the transaction, working with agents, with homeowners, buyers, sellers, even, you know, getting ready to go through the transaction. So I've been around it.
Was your last gig before the current position at CMLS, like in mortgage?
No, actually, that's what got me to my path was working for an organization. It was another nonprofit called Energy Fit Nevada. So I ran the grant from the Department of Energy for helping to make homes more energy efficient. And during that process, I recruited this lady to my board of directors there because we were working to try and get that information of us improving the home's energy efficiency into the MLS. So through that, one day I had a meeting with Shelley Specchio, now the CEO of MIBOR, and asked her to join the board of directors to help us add that piece of the conversation to what we were trying to do within our community.
So she was CEO of Northern Nevada.
Correct, yes.
And then MIBOR is Minneapolis, right? No, sorry.
Indianapolis. Indianapolis, yes.
Yeah. So there's an M there. That's
somewhere. So she was there.
Shelley's great.
She's fabulous. Learned a lot from her there. And when I had decided to leave the other organization, we had lunch.
So you're full-time at the nonprofit there?
I was. Yep. And I knew I was ready for something different. I didn't know what, but had made the succession plan and transition and had lunch with Shelley to say, you know, that I was leaving. Here's what's happening. And she said, well, this other organization is hiring a CEO. You should apply.
Yeah. There's like a big search that we did back then.
That was a lot. It was intense. It was one of the most intense things I've ever gone through.
Yeah, no, it was like, I was there on the board there, I think. Yeah, I think I was still on the board and it was crazy. And then they had the 100-day thing and all this other nonsense.
They made me work hard for that, for sure. Yeah, but it was great. My final interview was I had to do my first 100-day plan and then present that in front of five people over 90 minutes. But it was amazing exercise because it really made me dig in, being new to the industry. Well, the MLS side of it, I really had to study up and understand as much as I could in that process what the landscape was. And so it was a great way to start off in this position. I had to work. It was very nerve-wracking.
Right.
But
when you're like growing up and you're a little girl, I mean, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, gosh.
Were you into sports at all? Were you like
an
astronaut? I mean, like, you know, I want to be an astronaut or something like that.
No, I was always a bit of an entrepreneur from the time I was little, like the fundraisers they do at school and all the prizes you can win. I like always got whatever the max prize was and I would canvass the whole neighborhood. I would do that. I actually did hair for a while in high school. I would cut friends' hair and give perms, and I don't do that anymore. I don't know that I was great at it. I would do that. But like I said, my dad always did real estate. So we were always working on projects and he would always involve us in doing that. So, and I've continued that. I've done several projects myself over the years.
Like flipping, that kind of thing?
I've done everything from flipping, additions, scrape and build. Yeah. So all different parts. Like our current house is still an ongoing project of remodel, live within it. So, but I think real estate's just always been there. I've been involved in it some way, somehow, if even when I was in the banking side of things, working on helping people to get homes. Like it was just my passion.
What was the period in that? I mean, when you were doing mortgage, what kind of year period are we talking about?
Let's see, 2001 to 2009.
Yeah. So like the crash, the basically.
Right? Yeah. I lived through that. Yeah. 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 That was interesting.
Yeah. So that's a good time to get out of it.
Yes. Which was sort of.
Whether you wanted to or not, you're out of it anyway, right?
Yes. So, yeah. Yes.
Interesting.
I mean, I learned a great deal about the industry. I think it's a nice side to have. I dealt with the title side, the mortgage side, what makes an asset, how are they looking at them? So I understand that side. And then I dealt with the consumer too, right? That was my customer, right? Whether I was in the retail banking side or I was on the mortgage side, you know, I dealt with the consumer a lot. That was my life.
You were announced as the CEO, right? After that whole process, a little controversial, right? Because there were a lot of,
I don't know about the controversy because I wasn't there.
Well, you were in the process.
But I didn't know who else was in it.
So. Well, I mean, I think it's pretty fair to say that other people that are in it were MLS people.
Sure.
Right? So the controversy would come from, why are we hiring somebody that has no MLS experience to run an MLS organization, right?
I think people have actually asked me that blatant question.
That could be considered controversial, right?
Yeah.
I'm not crazy
I'm
for
with
saying
you
that.
I got it.
But you said, you know, just studying up and like, you know, doing as much as you can to kind of, I mean, I think that there's probably, and I'm sure you made this case yourself, that there's assets to like being an outsider somewhat to kind of bring in there. What would those things that now you're into it for, how many years has it been now?
It'll be 3 years in December.
Yeah.
So time flies.
Being an outsider, have you think that's helped or hindered? Or do you wish you had more experience? I mean, what are you looking at right now? Just so, you know, listeners know, there is the Council of MLS, it's CMLS. I started out as Northwest Council. It's a 50-plus year organization where MLS providers meet and share best practices about running MLS systems or MLS providerships. I've been going to CMLS or back when Northwest Council since
a long time.
Yeah, since 93, 94, right? 95, when it was just in the kind of Northwest area. But it's been a great conference then and it's a great conference now, but it's more than a conference, right? It's a group of individuals doing stuff.
I think the organization has definitely evolved significantly. I mean, we're at 203 members as of today. And
that's probably comprising, 95% of the listings out there?
Yeah, it's over 1.2 million subscribers is what it covers. So obviously there's some MLSs that overlap. So I don't report the exact number, but it's a significant portion of the market. So right. Definitely there. I think both the blessing and the curse of not having the MLS specific knowledge. So I had real estate knowledge. So it's not like the industry was new to me. I had, like I said, I had dealt the mortgage side. I dealt with title. I dealt with agents, been on all different pieces of the transaction. So I think one of my assets was that I was coming in with a new lens and I could question what was existing without necessarily understanding it's, you know, sometimes you hear the answer. That's the way we do it because that's the way we've always done it. Right. So I could just really come in and say, well, explain to me, why is it this way?
What's the craziest thing that you saw? Like when you like were hearing all these things, like, but you thought they do it that way? That's crazy. I mean, again, coming from an outsider inside, I mean, to me, I know that when I talk to my friends about things and non-real estate friends, they think that there's one MLS.
That is probably the most common that I get. Yes. Is that there's just one MLS that all goes in. And I said, well, if it's only that simple, but I don't know that it would be good if it was only that simple. So I get that really often. The other thing that's shocking to people when I talk about it, somebody told me to just go on the MLS and access something somewhere. And I said, well, I'm the CEO of CMLS, but I don't have access to a single MLS.
I get the same issue. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I just have like this open.
Can't you
access.
Just get me? I'm like, no, I can't.
No, it doesn't work that way. So
what about yourself personally when you first got in here and you started learning about it, like that you thought was like, that's crazy town.
Oh, what is crazy town? You know, I think. Actually, it was what my presentation, my interview was about, is this us versus them. we against them. And I was looking at it, and I'll just use the term organized real estate, right? The umbrella that has all the stakeholders, brokers, agents, MLSs, vendors, all the different participants. And they were, you know, I did my research of reading articles and white papers, what I could get a hold of. And even doing all that, it very much came out to me that it was in these silos, these people competing under that umbrella, almost against each other versus understanding it's the same end goal. We're trying to get everyone to homes, right? Like that's a really exciting, happy, great thing of helping people to get into homes. And so I've really tried to focus of, and in fact, I think it was you that made fun of me for using the word collaboration too much. I'm pretty sure.
Fun of people?
I know,
I
it's crazy.
That,
Greg making fun of that. That was really what I saw. And it was just very bizarre to start to realize how much it was, you know, us against them within our own industry. And so I've really tried to work to say, no, we all have the same end goal. How do we work better together to make these things happen? We don't have to agree on everything, and we don't have to like hug and sing kumbaya. But I think the more we can realize we're really going to that same end place, we're really trying to help that person, that family, that, you know, individual achieve that goal that they want, whether it's the buyer or the sell side, then keeping that in mind when we're doing what we're doing every day, I think allows you to see what we can accomplish together. Less of what we don't like and we don't agree on versus what do we have in common that we can move forward on and take action.
But it is a very weird situation, the idea of an MLS, this idea of compensation and cooperation, right? Where you have these competitors, these brokers who are out against each other to sell as much real estate as possible, but are sharing that inventory, right? At the same time, that dichotomy is really, really hard for people to kind of understand who are outside this business. And in fact, throughout the world, we're pretty much the only ones that kind of do it that way. And then being the MLS executives, having to manage that, you know, you can call it a broker cooperative, as Art says sometimes, or anything else, but it's got to be controlled chaos. I mean, these guys are at each other's throat, but they still share the same inventory and they agree to compensate each other if they sell each other's inventory. Hats off to MLS execs for even trying to keep that managed chaos going on. And through all the technology changes and everything else, it's even made their jobs more difficult.
Well, there's definitely a lot of people that MLS execs are trying to make happy during the process, and you can't really make everyone happy. So that is a huge challenge, and I see it, and I hear conversations from different participants, stakeholders referencing that. But I think that's what's the beauty of the system, right? Is you have people who are competing, and we just launched earlier this year our value of MLS and the making the market work. That's what an MLS does. It brings all those people together. And one of the quotes, one of my favorite ones, it says, gladiators competing to make home ownership happen. That's the whole idea. That's the whole picture, is we're trying to make home ownership happen.
Well, even though two opponents are bludgeoning each other to death.
Right. But ultimately that end goal, it's somebody in a home where they have dinner, where they raise a family, where they create memories. When you can see past that, that's really what you're helping to create. That's the beauty of it. And that's what makes it amazing. And it is here in the US. And I think one of the benefits for the consumer to be able to get on there and see actually all the inventory that's available, that's better for them. And that makes the process. I hear how it is in other countries, and I'm like, oh my gosh, my stress level just went up 5 notches because I have to go stand in a front yard somewhere and we're doing a live bid, or, you know,
yeah, it's different everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Or they have to pay for the listings to go online.
Something, it just doesn't seem like as me as the consumer is what I would want. So I think that's the beauty of our MLS system and the beauty of the competition and cooperation.
So, okay, I get, you know, it's all great and wonderful and fuzzy.
We're going to hug, right?
It's all about, you know, the homeowner and the lucky family. But I don't think that's your job, right? In a sense, right? I mean, I think you can have that vision and you can, and try to impart that vision on everybody there. But, you know, you're supposed to be representing multiple listing executives.
Yes.
Right. In what they try to do as their jobs. And those guys have, you know, they have issues. They have issues with, you know, problem brokers. They have issues with franchisors, with vendors, with those kind of things. Right. And you can think about like, oh, at the end of the day, we're all just here to sell homes to happy families. That's fine. But there are some serious issues out there now that MLSs have to deal with. And over the past, I think it's getting much better now, but, you know, there's been a lot of acrimony between brokers and MLSs. And that has nothing to do with home ownership. And you can try, hey, can't you guys get along for, we're trying to sell a home? You know, they're not going to hear that. They're business people. Right. And the MLS has to be this kind of referee with these guys to do that. And I think, you know, as the CEO representing the MLS executives, you have to help them accomplish and communicate the value proposition of what they bring. It's all fine to talk about the homeowners, but I mean,
I understand. I said that earlier, it's really challenging for MLS execs to make happy all the different stakeholders because you just can't make everyone happy. So how can we best support? And I try to make sure I'm advocating and promoting the conversation of what those challenges that the MLS execs have. So taking any opportunity I have to meet with all different MLS execs. So, you know, if there's a 1500 MLS membership or a, you know, 80,000 membership MLS, to just understand what those different challenges are, what they're running into, so that I can communicate those back when meeting with the different, you know, whether it's Craig Cheatham at Realty Alliance, is, you know, what are his brokers telling him? What's coming out of those meetings? Okay, well, here's what I'm hearing as my challenge from my MLS execs. How can we do a better job helping, I think, each of those entities understand the challenges the other is having? So why is the broker frustrated? What is not working for them? Well, what might be the offsetting challenge to the MLS exec that's not, why they can't just do what they're asking for? What is the challenge to that?
Right.
And so,
Let me throw out two scenarios that some people say.
Right? Give me a scenario.
I'll give you a couple. So one scenario is this whole broker, you know, you got 10 days and, you know, the broker's very frustrated about all the MLSs out there. Some people say that the problem there are the smaller MLSs that are not complying to NAR policy. They're not giving away, you know, or providing access to IDX data and these type of things. And those smaller MLSs are really ruining it for the people that the MLSs, the medium or larger one, that do have their shit together, right?
I do hear that, yes.
If the membership roster of CMLS, it really doesn't comprise much of those MLSs because, of course, they're smaller and they probably have less resources. Maybe the receptionist is also the IDX coordinator at that one board, right?
Sure.
First of all, would you agree that maybe that the smaller MLSs have been the issue as far as when these brokers call out non-cooperation from MLS? They're not saying that Trend is not doing it correctly. They're not saying that CRMLS is not doing it correctly, right?
So how many members an MLS have, I don't think directly correlates to how well they run their organization. You can have a larger organization that maybe is not meeting the needs of the brokers. They could still be having pain points. And I do get that feedback. It can be some larger MLSs that...
Really? A larger... I mean, you know, they're not providing IDX data or...
There can be some pain points, right? So it can happen in a conversation to where this one thing happens and what's the term? Oh, it gets painted with a broad brush, right? So one of them does it and it gets plastered across all of them. So trying to work to reduce those when they're happening, if I'm hearing that complaint is really who is it, what is it, and try to just do a better job communicating between those two and clarifying what's happening when I can. I've seen some lists of different MLS sizes across the country. I saw one, it was 28 members or 58 members or something. And I just don't understand the cost, how you provide services, but I haven't seen the books there. But as a business person, a finance major, it makes me scratch my head. But it's really not. It's if you're running an excellent organization, and I'll take it back to the CMLS best practices, and we're trying to promote that and why that was even created. And actually, right before I came on board under Art Carter, when he was CMLS president, you know, crafting those, that if an MLS can look at that and evaluate that they're doing a significant number of the things in there that apply to their market and are what their local market wants, then it doesn't matter how many subscribers they have if they're running an excellent organization that is efficient and responding and listening to what the needs of their...
Yeah, I think if CMLS's mission, right, is to kind of improve this industry.
Yes.
I would say as an idea, just floating this out here for you.
All right. Right.
That CMLS's mission would be, I think I read a list like here, this shame list of here's the MLSs that have not complied to RISO.
Yeah. Jeremy has the wall of shame.
Yeah. Wall of shame, right? That should be your lead list to join CMLS. I would go so far as that you would spend money to subsidize if they don't have the resources to join the best practices, give them a free membership, give them access to these tools and say, join us, right? Because I think the broad brush is whatever, but I'm guaranteeing you most of these issues are coming from these MLSs, these smaller MLSs that don't really have enough resources to do it. But I think if CMLS's role is to kind of improve this whole industry, you should subsidize them to get them up with everybody else. Instead of the, you know, you're kind of preaching to the choir here right now, I think, right? So
yes.
I would think about as an idea of looking that wall of shame and saying, you know what? That's our membership next year. I want to reach out to every single one of them and I'm going to give them a free membership. I'm going to give them this free kit and we're going to bring them to buy them an airline ticket to the next conference or something, right? To do
so, that. So we have in the works that came from the last CMLS strategic planning session was to take our best practices and actually turn them into a more interactive process that right now it's on a piece of paper they have to go through. So it's a little more work. Actually turn it into more of a tool that people can use that gives them a roadmap. So it can actually produce a plan of what they're not doing, ask them about, you know, evaluate what it is. And as part of that initiative, it was actually discussed that it could be a certification. So to even become members of CMLS that you have to go through this process so that everyone, it can cause an awareness and an interaction of evaluating what are your process and procedures. And actually Friday, we're having a meeting with that work group to continue the refinement and look at what the tool is that could be used. And
yeah, I see a whiteboard with all those names, and then you come in Monday and you're like, I got that one. We got those guys are on.
And that's where
until
we're going.
Until that whiteboard is like all crossed off, right? I think then you can say, you know, mission accomplished there, right?
And this being a way to do that, to engage them that is interactive, because the idea being when they get done, it's an evaluation. Okay, here's what you did well. Here's where you really need to improve, and that they can track that progress. So we could even see as an organization, we had people coming in, they started here, but then.
I think that's those are excellent tactics, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Those are tools you can help to accomplish that. I think without getting everybody on board, we're always going to have these issues of non-compliance of these MLSs are going to cause problems in these brokers that are spread out through various counties and things out there. I might be painting a broad brush myself here, but I know as a vendor myself, when we go out there to get our products, you know, and you get to a smaller size, they're like, you know, sold data. We can't give you sold data. It's like, well, it's a CMA application. You can't come up with comps or show comps unless it's, well, I don't know. You know, there's just nothing there. It's hard to have an argument. You're like talking to a post in a sense, right? I mean, it's you're arguing with yourself.
And we have talked about reaching out to, because right now we don't run a huge active recruiting campaign for members. We have people who are joining.
I think you should think about it though.
Been part of the discussion this year is how do we reach out to them? What do we give them? A lot of people, you know, telling us that budgets can be an issue to travel to these things. So how can we get more of the resources that we're doing over to them to use?
Okay. Secondly, in my rant, to tell you how to do your job. Okay.
Please.
It's been a frustration of mine of CMLS here. Like, look at me like, you asshole. So it's been a frustration of mine. It's like, and I get it, but I don't get it, right? And that the position that CMLS has taken or seems to have, from my standpoint, is one of education instead of one of leadership, right? In the sense that, or advocacy, maybe leadership's the wrong phrase, where here's a new thing that came up. Let's do a webinar. Let's do something and educate the membership about what this is all about. But us as an organization, CMLS is not going to take an opinion on it. We're just going to, everything here, here's it all laid out. Here's your rubric and here's your list of the pros and cons and you make your own decisions, right? So there's plenty of issues out there where, and I think this is where I thought that a CEO would be most useful because a lot of the MLS execs out there for political reasons and otherwise can't really be out there in front and make these statements, right? But you can act as this kind of, my membership says this is what the issues are, and you can take those hits without them having to take them directly politically, right? I think that's a tool, a tactic that
Greg,
you could use.
Greg, I think you described this to me once on the golf course, is I should be the one. The words you, I think that you used was, this is batshit crazy.
No, totally. There's some ideas out there that are batshit crazy. And just because an MLS exec cannot say that out loud, if as a member of CMLS, if that's like, you know, what everybody's kind of the consensus is, well, you should take those hits, right? You should be out there advocating and saying, my membership says that this is batshit crazy. And that's what we think. And here you go to the MLS policy committee, whatever you want to do, like, no, this is bad. But not be the educator, but I mean, really, you know, stand up for some of these things.
So I have not taken your advice directly on that and used those words, but I have used it. And
what has CMLS ever said is like bad or wrong?
Well, hopefully not very much, because that wouldn't be great, be saying bad or wrong, but we have 203 members, right? And so even just 203 members agreeing on it, we have a board of directors of 19. You were on the board of directors up until 2 years ago,
a year ago?
Yeah, he left when I came on board. He says, I'm out. Thanks, Greg. It's different because it's so different between each market. There is different rules. There is different regulation. So really get 100% consensus on everything.
I don't think you need 100% though.
I agree. And so I think also the change in the organization from bringing on a CEO of, did they do that before? Are they doing that now? And I think a big step with the white paper we did on 7.42 that's coming up in MLS policy, you know, to put that together and get the information that went into that. We didn't take an official stand of absolutely we need to do this. We gave some options so that it could be discussed. And I think we are going in that direction. I very much believe that that's what the board of directors wants to do. I think that's what CMLS does need to do. But I think it's also a process and an evolution to figure out the best way to get that feedback from our membership, from the board of directors, from the industry, the different stakeholders. How do we make sure we're going about it in a way that is constructive and helpful to the industry of to make progress? Because if it's something that's so divisive and causing more separation from what I said at the very beginning, the us versus them, how is it helpful? So while yes, I do take the hits and I stand up very much for the MLS exec and the MLS itself within conversations, I may not use your exact terms on stages anywhere. Just, I haven't done that yet. Maybe one day. But I think CMLS is definitely going that route. And I think it's become more active in those discussions and being involved in different initiatives in a more in a way to shape how that outcome happens.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think you guys should be way more aggressive on stuff. I mean, recently, I think you guys did a study and what is it, 47 or 57% of the membership didn't know or for sure we're not going to do anything with upstream, right?
We surveyed the members to the different industry initiatives to try and understand how much did they know about it, how comfortable with it, what we did upstream, AMP, Broker Public Portal. There was one more on there just to kind of understand the different initiatives that are happening. How comfortable was everyone with it? And did they want more information? Did they need more information?
Were you surprised about those results? Or
I don't think so. I mean, that's one of the areas I talked with Alex recently, Alex Lang, and said, you know, Alex, trying to help my MLSs here and the fact that if they're getting pushback of saying they're not supporting upstream, but how exactly do they show that support? There's not just a piece of paper where they can do check marks to say, yes, we're doing it because we did these three things. It's been in pilot mode and there wasn't an opportunity to really participate. So, you know, that's where I am saying that, not using your words, but just saying, how do my MLSs support that? Give me something really tangible that we can do.
I don't know whether this is planned or not, but I thought that was very deft in that type of thing. Those kind of things where you can put it out, you can survey, and then you release that survey. It's just a black and white kind of thing. Nobody's going to get, you know, fired over it, right? But it brings to the surface what the feelings are about those things, right? It was an interesting article to read about and the study to see there that it sounds about, I would probably say, I think that's the vibe that I get when I'm talking to people all around about different initiatives, the AMP and the upstream and RPR and things like that from the MLS perspective of what's going on, right? So yeah, I think those things I think are a little bit more, maybe you are dipping your toe in a little bit of advocacy and there's in a sense though that it's still anonymous in a way where, as I said,
nobody's
going
to get fired.
Well, and
that's with the survey, what we really wanted to understand from the membership is where is it that MLSs even feel like they need support or where are they saying we did the best practices? Where are they in relation to implementing those? So a lot of surprising information around marketing and communication plans. Like, is that part of the challenge with MLSs because they're not effectively communicating how or what they're doing? So can we help with that? Is there issues with the industry initiatives because they're not fully understanding it? And even at this point, like I said, my conversation with Alex is how do they say that they're doing it versus just, yes, I support it. I don't think that's helpful to either party. So that benchmarking survey, I think, is sort of a, CMLS has done surveys before, but they were much bigger before. I think the 2011 was the last time we did it. So this is really a way to establish against what we said is best practices as built by the industry. Where is our membership currently? I mean, I get emails and phone calls all the time from people going, wow, we actually dug into the best practices and I realized that we weren't actually doing some of those things. So we've implemented this or.
I think those surveys before were more driven towards operational things.
Yeah,
MLS,
they were
not
really,
really
broad. Yeah. Like taking a temperature of what was the industry, not a baseline benchmark to compare against. So we'll continue to build off that. From there, governance and another thing that was, I think we found a few things surprising in there that will develop additional resources that then become more specific best practices of like, really, this is the way that it needs to go. So I think you'll be seeing a lot more of that from CMLS, but there's been a lot of groundwork done to build how we advance from there to take those positions, to take those hard lines, to say, no, really, this is what you've got to be doing to serve the needs of the market.
So another controversial thing that I heard around, you know, a lot of the lobby bar stuff, your outreach to
my hair. No. Greg made fun of my hair at the CMLS conference in front of my mom, mind you.
Your mom was there?
Yeah, she came to help. So she was backstage and I said, "Mom, this guy's going to go on stage and he's probably going to insult me and make fun of me. It's okay though." And she looked at me, she goes, "Why did you invite him?"
Listen, the joke was cleared. Okay?
I know.
It was cleared.
It was great. It was great. And I still have not cut the rest of my hair.
It is the one that I hear most about, which I'm shocked. Okay. But, you know, the Upstream logo being a contraceptive device, nobody cared.
It's all my hair.
It was all about your hair. So.
Fabulous. Awesome.
The thing that I heard was a little bit like controversial was you reaching out with a partnership with NAR. And a lot of MLS execs, I'm like, what the hell? Because it seemed like, in a sense, this is supposed to be about MLSs.
Yes.
And NAR has been, from a lot of steps and turns, thwarting what we're trying to do, right? And now my organization is partnering with these guys. What the hell?
I have to say, I was surprised at the amount of pushback that we received from doing that. I figured there would be some pushback, but I was definitely surprised by the amount and a lot of what you're saying, from the boardroom discussion to members to, I mean, it continues on and on and on of people still now. I mean, we did that about a year and a half ago.
Oh yeah.
And
a lot of people are still pissed. Yeah.
I still get comments about it. I think really with that, actions will speak louder than words as we continue to.
We got new leadership over there.
We do have some new leadership over there, which I've been able to meet with Bob and talk with him. And I'm very encouraged and excited about having him there.
That's you, right? I mean, I think there could be different ways of playing this. And like, you are one of like being more inclusive and like reaching out and like wanting to talk to people. And I think a lot of times maybe the standard MLS exec profile is like not standoffish, but reserved and like, you know, you can't get too buddy-buddy with this broker or that. I mean, you have to stay, you know, neutral in a sense, right? Where you're out there, right?
But my job is still CEO of CMLS. My job is still to advocate for MLSs and to promote what it is that they need to do in making the market work and the job that they have to do, which I've said is it's challenging. There's so many people to make happy. But we can't continue to work with those partners if we're not partnering with the other organizations to make that happen. It'd be, you know, I've worked with Jeremy from Rezo. I mean, I talk with him regularly. I talk with Craig Cheatham. I work with Alex. It's each one of them to understand what those different participants are doing. How do we move it forward? And I will say the partnership with NAR has been great just to open a dialogue. They've hired Caitlin McCrory. I think it's MLS manager is her title. I always get a little backwards, but I mean, she's great to work with just as another communication channel to say, I meet with her and say, this is what we're working on at CMLS to make sure there's no overlap, or she can communicate that back to Katie and Bob to say, you know, CMLS is working on this. Can we support them? Is there just an awareness of what's happening? So I think actions will speak louder than words on this particular one of what we can accomplish and promote for MLSs and support what they're doing in the market. What I think has been the most successful thing out of that is we did have seats assigned to the different committees at NAR. And the number of people we've had apply for those positions that want to go in and speak as the national MLS voice. So they're not speaking for their own organization. When they're in that position, they're there as CMLS representation. We do prep calls with them to say, you know, what is the message that CMLS would like communicated through the board and the membership, and make sure it's part of that conversation on that particular committee. The request to be able to participate in that has been huge. And then the results within those meetings of the feedback and the participation of those people that are able to speak, they're not carrying the message from their own MLS. It's more about nationally, what does it mean to put on that bigger hat to say, what can we do to improve the industry? Huge success there. Very excited about that.
So you still like the gig?
I love it. It is crazy overwhelming at times, and just the travel schedule alone. I have two little kids, and so, you know, I FaceTime a couple of family events.
I say this, I've heard this before, FaceTime father. It's actually a phrase, which is really scary, right?
Yeah. There was, my favorite one was watching my older one play a basketball game. And at the end, the coach gave her the trophy that they won. And I was so mad that I missed it. But then I totally started like crying like a baby, and I'm not much of a crier. So I was like, oh, thank God I'm not there. Then no one can see all of this. So that's been hard, but, and my family's super supportive. So that makes it easier, but I love the job. The people I work with, everyone's like, what can we do to help you? What can we do to support you? You know, whatever you need.
There should be like a support group of all our wives and husbands of all of us in this industry that travel so much to do this thing.
That share would stories.
Like, and then my wife would like to see, I talk about these different characters or whatever. And, oh, that's her. Like, she's a school teacher and she'll talk about like,
the people
last
work.
Names and yeah. like, and then when I see him at the open house, oh, okay.
That's who that is.
Yeah. Oh, connect okay. Them. That's her. Yeah. That kind of stuff. But like, you know, have a support group, like a Slack channel or something.
Yeah. That would be good. Just kind of sometimes it gets a little bit crazy doing all those things. So it's nice to hear those stories.
It's a great industry though. I think I love being a part of this industry. I love the people industry. I know that people, once they get in it, I mean, if that company gets bought or acquired or they're moving on to another, there's such a like, everybody
it's a
hops
small community
because
yeah.
they want to stay in that industry.
I'll get the history of people like, okay, so that person yeah. there used to work for that person when it was at this company that worked for there. And I'm like, I need to write this stuff down. So I
no,
can keep
everybody has that kind of lineage, right? Of,
yeah.
Of different except companies they worked for. Yeah. Except for you. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, it's like, I think a lot of people try to impart how they feel and like how they would do this. Different areas, including your job. You've got a lot of strong egos in the MLS industry as well. For me, I'm like, what, you know, why don't they, you know, there's always this kind of, you know, quarterback, you know, what do they call that?
Backseat drivers.
Yeah. Backseat drivers. Exactly. Armchair quarterbacking about how you would do it. But, you definitely got your own style and it seems so far things have been going in, I think, a positive direction.
Thank you.
So congratulations. You know, we'll see what happens next here, huh?
I appreciate the opportunity to come chat with you, Greg. I think you weren't too hard on me. We'll hopefully see. I answered your questions. And
yeah. This interrogation of like, no, do this. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us and thanks for listening. Talk to you guys soon.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.